Hey, Mom.
Hey, baby.
This is Theory with an I.
And this is Danny with a Y. And this is Eating Rotten Apples.
Holy cow. I cannot believe that it is, like, this is it. Like, this is officially it.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I can actually believe it just because how we always just sit and talk and have conversations. I'm just happy and thrilled that so many people, and I want to say shout out to all of you guys who subscribe to our channels with just one episode. I am utterly shocked how many followers, and I just want to say I am truly grateful.
Very much so.
Yes. So shout out to you guys, and I'm hoping that you guys return for the next episode, and we do not disappoint.
Not to, you know, change the subject. Can we talk about what is on your shirt? Did you not change it?
Yeah, I accidentally spilled wine on my shirt.
That's Danny.
Yeah, that I'm very clumsy, if nobody didn't know that already. I even have it tattooed on me.
Gracefully clumsy.
Okay. Okay. Oh, yeah. But I even spill food. I spilled food. This is the second time I changed my pants because I spilled my food on my pants. But I didn't decide to change my shirt, so that's great. I love that for me. Matter of fact, speaking of food,
this episode is going to be very deep and different. Because the month of February is Eating Disorder Awareness Month, we decided to make an episode as I and my mother both have suffered from eating disorders.
Well, not necessarily I have dealt with eating disorder. Like, I probably thought I had an eating disorder when I was younger, but it wasn't to the extent that you experienced it.
I feel like an eating disorder is an eating disorder, and everyone has different levels of it. Yeah. And I think if you have any type of sort of way of body dysmorphia that had to do something with food, I consider it as an eating disorder.
That's true.
Just because yours wasn't as harsh and harder on you doesn't mean that you didn't have one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at it that way, yeah, I can agree to that.
But if you didn't have one and you think that you didn't have one, then that's just completely different. I'm just saying from, like, if you think that you have any type of battle with food in your body, I feel like that's automatically, like,
yeah I get it.
And different levels.
Yeah, so it's kind of a little tricky for me because when I was younger, I didn't want to eat anything because I was trying out for the cheerleading team and everybody else was very thin, and I too was thin, but not as thin as the other girls. So of course I wanted to be as skinny as they were, and I wouldn't touch anything besides like a cracker and some celery. But it only lived in me for a couple weeks, and then I was like, I like food. And I just consumed, and I till this day, I love food. But for you, yours was a little different. And
very so much different.
Yeah, very different. And I'm shameful on how, you know, I first visited the situation with you. I know a lot of people are like, oh my God, you handled it so well. And in all reality, that first like couple weeks,
it was really harsh on my mom.
It was. I took a personal when I shouldn't have, and my focus was on like healing you immediately without the steps and protocols that it does take.
Yeah,
you know,
it took a process, but I feel like we both have overcome that. Even though I did let the eating disorder that at first I didn't know I had, because there's so many steps leading into an eating disorder that you don't even know that's leading up to, like you saying that you wanted to be so thin for cheerleading, it didn't lead you fully onto an eating disorder clearly, because you're like, no, like I gotta eat. But something that I did that took me to where I was that I didn't realize was making me, you know, I have an eating disorder was, if I had pictures to take the next day, I would say, well, I look really skinny, aka not bloated right now because I didn't eat anything, so I shouldn't eat tomorrow. That led on every single day. Like, every single day took me, like, okay, well, you got pictures to take tomorrow, too. Well, you got a photo shoot next week as well, so you can only eat fruit, or you can only eat breakfast in the morning and don't eat for the rest of the day.
Ugh.
So that, little did I know, took a huge, huge, it took away from me, like.
Yeah, it took a toll on you.
A huge toll on me, and I didn't really realize it.
Until I was like,
you've lost so much weight.
Yeah, and that was one of my biggest mistakes. The first mistake that any parent could make at a time when they notice that their children aren't eating their dinner all the way, or they're skipping meals, or they're disappearing right after they eat stuff, which that's another topic that I still, it's very touchy for me to talk to you about it, because I feel like may hid anorexia from me, but that's for a different topic, unless you want to talk about it here. But my first mistake was, oh my God, Theory, you're getting so skinny. Like, I would talk about how skinny she would get, not knowing that, you know, she was purposely doing that to herself. And it didn't really dawn on me until she got to a point where I had to sit down and was like, are you purposely doing this?
Yeah.
And she's, you were still lying to me. And I really didn't know until you were like, I have an eating disorder. It was nothing extravagant of like, let's go sit down and I have to tell you something. You're just like, I have an eating. I'm like, what? What?
Huge.
Another thing that I did wrong was just like, oh, it's just in your head. You'll get over it. Like, this is
temporary.
It's temporary. This is just temporary. And I still hate that I said those things to you until, you know, I just start educating myself a little bit more on, you know, support groups and how to be supportive and how to incorporate healthier meals. Even I lost about 20 pounds because I was eating more nutritional foods. So she would be eating more. I would be eating more of healthier foods. So it was all a learning process. And I hate that people take their hat off to me immediately. Oh my God, how did you like?
Yeah. Same thing with me.
It's how did you be so involved? How were you so positive during that? I'm like, trial and error, because I was making boo-boos left and right.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me is, how did you lose so much weight? Or they're like, how did you get over your eating disorder?
She still struggles.
I struggle to this day with my body. Literally 5 minutes before me recording, I was looking at myself, which... One thing I do not do, and I tell people this all the time, or I'll just talk about it to myself, like, I don't want to get in the shower, or I don't want to change my outfit, because I don't want to look at myself. That is something I deal with, literally, I deal with it, I dealt with it today. Like, I know I'm going to a gathering with my friends tonight, I don't want to consume any alcohol, because I'm going to feel bloated, and I'm not going to want to look at myself. Like, it's things like that that make me want to kind of fall back on to that time in my life where I don't want to be that version of myself again, but I still have that mindset that
it's an addiction.
It's
an addiction.
Get rid of.
Yeah. People don't look at it as an addiction, but it is. Body dysmorphia is a serious illness where you are consumed by the intakes and what your body looks like and it's an addiction.
It's scary.
Just like you were saying, you don't want to even look at yourself because you're scared that, I'm just assuming your feelings and your emotions, but you're scared to see something that you're like, oh my God, there's a little jiggle there, or there's a little bit more meat in an area where
you don't want it.
And that is a trigger. It is a trigger. And it's so, that's, sometimes I try, and you could let me know if I do this, because I try not to say certain things that might be triggering to you. And I caught myself earlier today, and I was like, I lost 2 pounds today. And I was like, oh shit, was that triggering? Was that triggering to you? And I know I constantly apologize for
saying certain things.
Certain things, because I should know a lot of your triggers, but I...
At the same time, it's a topic that I'm not very open with. I always kept everything of how
very
I felt
private.
And what led me to this, I've kept all that private. So at the end of the day, you really don't know my triggers. I don't know my triggers. I mean, like, I know what would trigger me, and that's me looking at myself.
Yeah.
But people talking about it, or people saying, like, oh, like, I had one meal today, or, oh, I did this, that doesn't trigger me, because
It doesn't affect me that way. Your image is
my
image,
and how I look at myself is that's what affects me. The only thing that recently affected me was a comment on a post that I made about
I wanted to rip
me being really skinny in high school, because I was, and at the junior and senior year I did gain a lot of weight, which I was still beautiful, whatever, but having so much weight and then me being where I was mentally, it caused me to have an eating disorder. So I made a post about me being skinny in high school and now that everyone's asking for my routine. And someone had the nerve to comment, but you were fat. Mm. And then you got an eating disorder. That's how you lost weight. So don't mislead people.
Ooh, that and was
it was like, wow. Cool. Because for one, I let you guys into a deep
part of yourself.
Part of me that I didn't even let my mom into for a very long time. So the fact that I let millions of you guys into and you took advantage of knowing that, how vulnerable and how weak I was mentally, you put that out there in the most negative way possible. That just, like, it that triggered me. That tore me up. Because, I was chubbier. But does that mean I wasn't going through body dysmorphia?
Yeah.
Because I was.
Yeah. And that's a challenging thing to put out there. Mm-hmm. It's like I also talk about my addiction on my social medias.
Yeah.
And they're 99.9% of the time they are positive. But then you have people that are unhappy, they're miserable, mm-hmm. and they want you to feel as down as they do. Mm-hmm. So I look at those comments and it's like a gut punch. Mm-hmm. Because then I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not that great.
Yeah.
But then you go and you read the positive comments. But putting that kind of information out there on social media, it's unfortunate. But
very dangerous to do.
Yeah. Also, but you had a very big support system.
A huge one.
As soon as we talked about it, social media talked about it, you did have, like, a lot of my friends.
Yeah, a lot of her friends, which was, like, really great. A lot of her friends would text me of them eating a bagel. Like, I ate a bagel. What did you eat? Like, making sure that I ate. My mom would call me and be like, hey, I had 2 muffins. What did you eat?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay. So I have someone. Because to me, I'm thinking, I would never get out of this mind space. I was, you know, blocking, which this is very helpful. I'm not sure if it's helpful for anyone else, but for me, any girl that I would sit there and compare myself to, I blocked. Comparison is the worst thing, especially when you don't feel loved by people and you don't feel love for yourself. Mm. So it's kind of like, who are they looking at? Who is, like, my mom idolizing? Who am I idolizing? Who was everyone else, like, commenting, like, oh my god, her body. I wasn't getting those comments.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, something's wrong with me, like, da da da. So I'm comparing myself to every single person that I want to look like.
Yeah.
I block them.
Yeah. I mean, if you everybody's healing. I feel like
that really helped me. It might not help you guys or whoever's listening, but for me blocking anyone that I was like, oh, the moment I'm thinking her body figure, oh,
I need that. Yeah. I want that. I'm jealous of that because in hindsight, you do not know what those people are doing maintain those body images. And a lot of times, they're all altered. A lot of the pictures that you see today are photoshopped and edited. There's so many editing apps.
Or they're sucking in.
Or they're doing... And I'm not saying that all people do this. Mm-mm. And I am not saying all people do this. So I don't want you guys to get that twisted. Because I'm not saying that. But a lot of the times, a lot of the models and a lot of the people are experiencing eating disorder, body dysmorphia. They're editing. They're, you know, it's a continuous pattern in the beauty industry. Mm-hmm. Where as though, like, there was a Bella Hadid. And I'm not talking shit about her because I know she's loved by many. She, not saying that she lied, but there was a video of her saying, this is what I eat. As a model, and it was like a whole pie of pizza, and I'm like, that's a little misleading, because I know that there's a lot of models out there that are on a strict diet, and maybe 100%. Her metabolism's different than a lot of other people's, but I hate when it's people are misinforming other people, and the bulk of the people don't get to eat a whole pie of pizza.
And don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure it's pretty accurate, but she also said, and this is not a hate Bella Hadid.
Yeah, because we love her.
This is just a realistic type deal that she also said that there's times where you're not eating because you're working for 14, 15 hours straight, so you're not eating.
Like,
you're hardly eating, and that is probably one of the first things that lead to an eating disorder is, I'm busy right now.
The normalcy of not eating.
Yeah, I'm busy right now, I can't eat, I'll eat later, and you still don't eat.
Yeah.
That leads to it.
Whew. Like, I'm just really, you know, proud that you really, every day, regardless of a bad day, a good day, you get up and you go and you make sure that you eat.
Oh, yeah.
You do make sure that you eat. I know sometimes you feel bad and I don't like to bring it up. And I know, you know, sometimes it's harder to eat when you do see a little change. Mm-hmm. And as a woman that is growing and my metabolism is slowing, and I hear myself out loud, and I sometimes believe that I possibly was a cause, one of your causes of having a body dysmorphia. I believe that I was one of the causes of you having body dysmorphia and an eating disorder, because I critiqued myself a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, being a dancer for a very long time, I was weighed in. I was always talking about my body. I was always talking about what I was consuming. Oh my gosh, I'm a little fat. And I know, or I believe, that you overheard it and it lingered in the back of your head. So maybe there was something that resonated with you that I was saying about my own self. And it wasn't intentional. Mm-mm. And it's just something that mothers do. Mothers do this all the time, unknowing that their little girls are listening. Their kids. Yeah, because we're always critiquing ourselves. Mm-hmm. Everybody critiques themselves.
Look as perfect as you want. My mom repeated this to me over and over. And this is what resonates with me. You critiquing yourself does not resonate. What it does, it makes me feel like I'm not alone.
Yeah.
So you saying like, oh my God, like this is bothering me. It makes me feel like, okay, well, she thinks there's issues with her. Not issues, but you don't find yourself as perfect. So I know like I'm not crazy. Like I don't find myself perfect. She doesn't.
You don't feel alone.
Yeah, I don't feel alone. I feel like you see me, I see you. So I respect you more for, you know, talking about what you don't like about yourself.
My imperfections.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me, doesn't make me resonate with that. But what resonates is you saying that no matter if I go down two sizes, if I go up two sizes, I would never still be like, I'm perfect this way. I'm always going to find something that's bothering me.
Everybody's going to never be satisfied with what they look like at that time.
Exactly. So that always like resonates with me.
That's happy. Yeah. So be happy with what you have right now.
Yeah.
Because 2 years from now, you're going to look at your pictures and I'm like, my gosh, I wish I appreciated what I look like then.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's hard to do.
It is very hard to do, but
it's hard to do.
The way I've tried to overcome everything that I've been through mentally and physically is you're the only person that looks like you.
Yeah.
You're the only person that is you, and you're the only person that has this life. You only live once, and you die eventually. So don't go your whole entire life picking yourself apart.
Yeah.
Don't go your entire life or this age, this era, this decade, just picking that one thing apart, because you're beautiful the way you are. You're the only person that looks like that. You're the only person that talks, and you're goofy, or you're...
You're only you.
You're the only person that is you. And how would you feel if your daughter was thinking that way about herself?
Themselves, yeah.
You know?
Well, I've lived that.
Yeah. And
I've lived that.
I think that all the time. If I'm in like a toxic situation with myself or with another person, how would I want my daughter to react with that?
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
And you know what's so funny? As a young adult, you think about that and you're like, well, I would never. And I have that ringing tone in my ear ever since I was little. I would never do that with my child. Mm-hmm. I would never say that to my child. And 9 times out of 10, I have said it to you.
In that situation.
So it's like, I didn't know what to do when you brought that information to me. I know I wasn't probably the easiest person to tell, but I believed at the time I was saying and doing the best that I could that you needed to hear. And that wasn't the truth, because everybody's different. Mm-hmm. Well, I was telling you things that I probably wanted and needed to hear if I was in that situation. And this is where we are today. I had to really educate myself and find groups and people and supporters and educators to help me realize that it was about you. Mm-hmm. Just the same thing as in raising you as the individual that you are. It's like, I have to raise theory, how theory needs to be
raised
and taught and loved. I cannot love theory the way that I want to be loved. I have to love theory the way that she needs to be loved. I need to teach theory how theory needs to be taught. So that is something that I kept on reiterating to myself over and over and over again through the challenge. And like, what does theory need? Mm-hmm. What does your daughter need during this course and time and struggle and trial and tribulations? Like, mm-hmm. I need to be there for her, how she needs to be healed. So that is one of the most important things when mm-hmm. people ask me, like, what did you do? I'm like, look, I did X, Y, and Z, but that was what my daughter required. I can only give you so much advice. I can give you resources. I can help you and I can be a support system for you. Mm-hmm. But everybody's healing journey, everybody's addiction is different. And that also falls into my addiction, because a lot of people always ask me, like, Dani, how did you do it? And I'm like, I had to hit my rock bottom.
Everyone hit their rock bottom.
Everybody has to hit their rock bottom. If your addiction is gambling, porn, eating disorders, drugs, there are so many addictions. Everybody has to hit their rock bottom to want to get out of that mindset. And my rock bottom was awful. And so when people ask me, like, what did you do? I'm like, I was scared to death. I was scared to death. And it was easier for me. But it wasn't my first time trying to get clean off of pills and cocaine. Like, it really wasn't. I've been on that journey for a very long time, and I knew repeatedly over and over I didn't like feeling this way. So I also, back to the eating disorder, I knew that your journey was going to be yours and yours only. Mm-hmm. But I could be the support that you needed. And I hope I am still.
Yeah, you were.
And I'm hoping that I'm still.
I don't find myself battling as hard. I was battling in California very hard up until we came home. Still was battling.
California was probably the worst.
The worst that I've been. I would hate to ever find myself going back to that part of me. I don't want to ever see myself that way.
You know what's so funny? And not to cut you off, but we can do like a whole few months of the stories about California. Everybody asked over and over, so what happened in California? And I'm just like, it was a shit show.
That's my rock bottom.
That was your rock bottom for sure.
That was my rock bottom.
But we can go in a lot. We can have stories for months about
California.
The 4 months that we were away in California. Yeah. It was
up into tragic. Us leaving Maryland, because the drive up to California was probably a whole season itself.
Oh gosh, the drive was awful. But I also noticed, because you kind of got a handle on your eating disorder before we left for California. So, and that was a conversation that you and I had mm-hmm. prior.
How would I feel being in? And I went on headstrong when my mom, my aunts, her friends were asking me, Theory, do you really think that you'll be fine in California? You know, California is a very image place. Mm-hmm. With your eating disorder, can you do it? And I was like, what? Like,
I am healed.
I'm healed. I got this. The moment that I walked into that state,
we drove
into that state, it hit me like, I don't even know.
And yeah, it was the day we went to the Grove and you seen that brunette walking.
Oh yeah. And I was like, my jaw dropped and I was like, I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
Yeah, we had to leave the mall immediately. We went to the Grove and she was so fixated on this woman, and she was very thin, she was very tall, she was walking gracefully, and I was explaining to Theory that, you know, everybody is on scene, they're in character when they're walking around, because
you never know who's watching.
You never know exactly who's watching. I wish I never said that. I wish I never said that. But I didn't know that was going to be one of her triggers. Because at the time, I still didn't know that Theory was blocking all the models, anybody skinny. And I should have known that this trip would have been awful. And it wasn't just, the trip wasn't awful because of her eating disorder.
California was my rock bottom. That's why I'm home. That's why I'm home.
That is definitely why we are home, because I had a different type of rock bottom. When I say our relationship was as rocky as any relationship in the world at the time, it was so rocky. And it was not surrounding, you know, her eating disorder. It was just that I didn't know how to talk to her anymore, because she blocked me all the way out.
I blocked
everybody out.
Everyone possible out of my life, because I think that I'm the only person that can fix anything. Which, we've talked about this. She says it. I don't know how to take that in, but she's like, it's a two-person thing. If there's something that I can help fix, I'm willing to do that. If, you know, it's always two people. It's never just one thing. One person fix thing. Me, in my head, it's I'm the only person that can fix it. I'm the only one that can change anything that's going on in my life. Which,
it's true. It's true to an extent.
To an extent. But when I'm going through something that has to do with me mentally, depression, physically, eating disorder, yeah, I don't want no one's help but my own. Because I know that if I isolate myself for 3 days, 3 days after that, I'll be back. So
Four months until I was very furious. It was four months. She didn't leave her room one time for a whole month. It was devastating, because I never seen my kid so depressed. I was trying, and I was pulling out all the tricks, and I was like, oh my God, I'm an awful person. Like, this is, like, she was going through her breakup. She was trying to find her own worth, herself, her own identity, not just being up underneath her mom.
Yeah.
You know, so what I was trying to tell her when I kind of like was like, we're leaving, I need my support system, because I'm also here alone. Mona. My dog, Mona. Everybody has seen her and loves her very dearly. And Tina.
Yeah.
But my support system, and you are always a big fixture in my support. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I couldn't support you, you couldn't support me. We were in a foreign state. We had nobody. A lot of the people that we're, you know, connecting with wasn't connecting mentally. It just was, we couldn't get our little feet on the ground outside of the house. So, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the times we were spending alone. Me personally, I was alone, and Theory was alone, because she was self-isolating and she wouldn't let me in. But it got to a point where I had to really step in, and I was like, we're going to have to go home. I need support, because you're not letting me help you. I know you want to self-isolate. I know you feel like you can fix this all on your own, because that is a tool that I have always provided with you. Like, if you want to change your story, you change it. But I've never was able to really give you the tools to get out of this cycle of this eating disorder. Like, you wasn't allowing me to help you. And it just kept on just beating our relationship down. Mm-hmm. And I'm not blaming you, and I'm not blaming me. Because I know I had a lot to do with, because I'm like, this is my excuse, and this is why I'm not sorry. No, I've apologized over and over and over again. I just was, and I'm not saying this because I know you told me that it bothered you that I said this. I was disappointed. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed in your actions and your behavior. Mm-hmm. Not just towards me, but for yourself. Because you got to a point, and mind you, I've never told my daughter that I've been disappointed in her a day in her life. So that triggered her even more.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? It's over for me. Took me, like, I don't want to be here. Like,
yeah,
there's no turning back, which there is. But
And I'm not I am not laughing because I thought it was funny. I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable, because I do that a lot, because I was a bad parent.
And she wasn't a bad parent. She was honestly just being truthful with me, but that did not make it better for me.
Oh, no.
At all. The it did not. Message from her saying that she's disappointed, and then the message from Tina saying, you know, isolating yourself is just going to make you more depressed, which, for one, it doesn't for me.
Yeah.
Me isolating myself gives me, like, time to regroup for myself. Everyone knows that, like, if I want to be by myself,
you're by yourself.
I'm by myself. If I don't want to be bothered by no one, I don't want to be bothered by no one. Yeah. So, getting messages from Tina, like, no, like, you need to stop. Like, your mom's depressed too. Go spend time with her. Like, I can't even get myself up out of bed. Yeah. There's no way that I'm going to be with my mom depressed too. If we're depressed together, that's going to be worse. Like, I can't. So her saying, like, I'm disappointed in you, I was like, I can't do this. Like, there's no turning back from that. Like, I made the person that I care about most disappointed in me. So it's kind of just like,
I was more disappointed in myself because I felt like I couldn't be there for you.
Yeah, but it's hard to be there for someone when they don't want you to be there.
Yeah. And then there were so many times of regret that I was, you know, living through too. It was like, why did I, you know, allow Theory her whole entire life to self-isolate when she needed it? Mm-hmm. And I feel still to this day that it's healthy for who you are.
Yeah.
Because you only need it a day.
Yeah.
As in, I need 30 seconds to regroup, but you only need it ever a day. I've never seen you need like four months.
Yeah. But it was really hard for me. Like, I, for one, moved across the country, 40 hours away from my mother, Tina, that I love dearly, also my whole entire family. I just got out of a 3-year relationship that took the worst toll on me. I was going out to California, and I met so many people, but they wasn't fulfilling what I needed. Yeah. So it was just like, I didn't feel wanted. I didn't feel seen. I was going through a breakup. Then I also have friends that I was missing. My mother, like, I had so much stuff going on. Change in me. I'm good with change. But that change was not a change that I want to ever deal with again. It caused me to hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Everybody hits one. Oh, well, not everybody. I shouldn't say that. But I don't want that to be your experience of a big change like that, because it's not always going to be like that.
Never.
Me, but as your mom, I should have listened to my instinct, where when I had that conversation with you, like, Theory, look, I'm quitting my job. You want this. I'm here to support you. I want you to do this because you want it so bad.
Yeah.
And I should have listened to my instincts when we were having a conversation, like, Theory, are you going to be okay with this change?
I thought I was.
As a young adult, I was like, okay, just allow her to live this experience. Whatever it is, she's going to live this experience, and you being the supportive mom that you think that you're being is giving her that, because I didn't have that experience with my mom. I told my mom I had a dream. She sat there and just, you know, she didn't sit there and do nothing with it. She just didn't encourage it. Like, she really didn't encourage me to follow my dreams. My dream was also to move to California ever since I was a child, but I wasn't able to do that until I got financially and mentally stable enough to get up and go, regardless if it was to leave my whole entire existence. But I should have known that. Not that you were not ready, but knowing that you wasn't more prepared mentally.
Yeah.
And that is, and I am sorry for that, because I should have protected you. And
there's only so much you can do.
I know, but it's hard, but when you can't. It's
a life learning experience.
Like, I will fight anything. I will fight anybody. I want to protect you. I will protect you.
That's her thing.
I'm a protector naturally. If it starts with M, I'm going to. If it starts with my family, my money, my daughter, my dog, my car. Well, not my car, not more material stuff, but like anything mine. My family. I'm a big anything family person.
That she cares about.
Anything that I care about. I'm going to fight. I am a protector. That's what I do. So when I can't protect my pride and joy, my seed from herself.
I'm not laughing at you. But,
okay, if you can see what I'm doing, I'm like trying to strangle the microphone.
Because I know my mom very well, and I know that if it has anything to do with protecting, it's her.
It is.
She is the definition of protecting.
Yeah, I am a protector. And I'm a healer.
And a healer. So it's kind of like, girl, like,
she's, I can't, like, protect or heal my baby. I'm so done.
What am I going to do? Like,
my self-worth is out the window.
Basically, she's like, I don't deserve to exist. I literally don't. Like, I can't do the two things that I want to do the most to the most important person to me.
Yeah.
So what is my purpose?
Yeah, what is my purpose? Can't do. I can give you finances. I can do that. Yeah. You want money? There you go. Yeah, I can literally do that.
She's like, you want to go shopping? You want to go shopping, Theory?
Okay, a little fun fact about me. I tend to take people shopping or out to eat when I'm trying to, like, gauge their mental state. It's like, okay, I can try to fix it if I get you out in the sun, get you some food, get you some clothing, take you to the movies, whatever. I'm trying to gauge you. So any of my friends are out here, if I keep on asking you to go out or shop with me, it's because I'm trying to gauge your mentality.
She's just trying to see what's going on without you even talking about it.
Yeah, because I am a watcher. I watch people. And
that's something that I actually have learned from you, because when I'm at my girlfriend's house and I'm watching everyone around me, and they're like, Theory, like, what are you doing? And it's me. I'm people watching. And yeah. I'm
reading you.
Reading. And they're like, okay, well, what are you reading? Like, tell me about myself.
You don't want to know.
You don't want to know. And I took that and I...
You came home in trouble so many times for that, and I've told you, stop.
And I didn't make a mistake, but I did tell someone what I was thinking about them. And yes, it's true, but they did not take it well.
Yeah. Nobody likes to be told the negatives about themselves. Yeah. Everybody likes to be highlighted. Yeah, like, please praise me. Please tell me all the good I am, all the good I do. And, you know, people love me. People love me. People want to be loved so bad. Mm-hmm. And in all reality, you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Not everybody's going to like you. And I don't want everybody to like me. And neither should anybody else. But that's for a different...
That's a whole different thing. Manipulation, narcissism, controlling... We catch it before.
I will.
Like, the thing is, my problem, I will let someone think that they are manipulating
me. I'm blind.
Like, I'm blind. But little they know, I have a whole notes in my phone of things they've said.
That and just...
how I break that apart. Because I know. I'm not
oblivious. So do you find yourself always picking people apart?
I pick people apart.
Is it, like, in a good way?
Both.
Okay, but good.
Like, if someone says something positive, I'm like, oh, okay. If someone says something negative, I'm like,
Have you ever noticed the type of people that overly compliment you?
Yes.
I don't know how to, I know how to gauge them, but I'm just like, okay, what else? Like, okay, can you have a meaningful conversation? Mm-hmm. I get that, you know, a compliment in the middle of a conversation or middle of an introduction is very sweet and nice and disarming.
So do you mean as, like, if you're having a conversation, like me and you just talking, and I'm like, oh my god, your teeth are so pretty. Like, do you mean as that?
Yeah, like, overly...
But they repeat themselves.
Yeah, like, oh my god, girl, you're so pretty. Like, okay.
Like, do you
Do you think that my conversation is dull and you...
Or do you think they're trying to believe what they're saying? Like, they want to keep saying it to, like, try to convince themselves.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just...
That's my thing. Like, if I'm overly getting complimented, which, you know, my biggest pet peeve is getting complimented.
She hates being complimented.
I'm not saying I hate being complimented. No, I
hate... Please follow up. This is fine print. Please follow up with she is smart.
Yes. Listen, you can call me pretty. You can call me gorgeous. Okay, thank you. I take it in. I take it in because as a confident girl, I am. I know. I have a lot going for myself, though.
Yeah,
but
you do.
My biggest pet peeve is being complimented, talking about I'm pretty and I'm beautiful. Just because I know I can have a conversation, I know that I'm intelligent, and I know that I'm smart.
Yeah.
But the only compliment that I see myself getting is that I'm pretty and I'm beautiful. But then again, do I ever put myself in situations to where I can have an intelligent, deep-to-deep conversation?
Yeah.
Like, I don't. So, of course, I'm not going to get that type of compliment that I'm really receiving. I get the, oh, she's sitting so tall and beautiful.
Yeah, she's confident.
Which I don't have a problem with. That's fine. But when I tell you, it'd be eating me up inside.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to dislike that as well. Like, where I am... out. And this is where the whole, like, do you think that I'm dull or you don't think that I'm intelligent enough to have, like, a meaningful conversation? It's like, oh my god, you're just so pretty. I'm like, oh, but I was really just talking about the atmosphere right now. Like,
yeah.
Like, or what? Am I boring?
Yeah. Mine is like, excuse me, when I don't... Okay, my trust issues are big. So when people are...
We know.
Yeah. And I really think this is what stems with me in the back of my head. My mom, my family, my aunt, especially my aunt, complimented me so much growing up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, beautiful, tall, smart, every single day.
You could achieve anything.
You can change anything. 5 times a day, I would hear that how beautiful I am. Which, okay, that's good because you're stemming in, like, self-love, self-worth.
Yeah, I was trying to always instill, like...
You are beautiful. A black, beautiful girl. You're black, especially that.
Beautiful black girl magic. And but, you can accomplish anything.
Yes, and I love that for you. But it... To where I am now, like, to this, to right now, if you were to come to tell me that I'm pretty, I'm like, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
And that's just because, not because I don't believe in myself, because I know I'm beautiful, but it's like...
You're a little jaded.
I hear all the time. Like, are you just saying that to say that? The only time that I really believe someone is, which is, this happened recently, we're at Mad Max, this girl was walking and she looked at me, but she turned around and then she turned back and looked at me. She was like, wow, you're gorgeous,
holy crap.
But that's like because she just put a full-on action of like, oh my god, like someone just caught my eye.
Yeah.
But if it's like you coming down the street and you're just like, oh, like you're gorgeous, and then whatever, we don't talk or anything, I'm just like, okay, like,
yeah,
all right.
I guess social media has a way of only given visual for half of the time. So comments are always like, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful, you're so sweet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, do you want to talk about the sun?
Mm-hmm. Do you?
You know I do. I like to have... I
will talk about dust on the floor if it has to be.
I do not have the capacity to talk about small things. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to have small talk. I'm awkward. If you come up and we're like, oh my god, I love you, I'm like, oh yeah, I ate 2 ants when I was a kid.
No, literally. Can I please tell the story? No. Shout out to the girl at Cheesecake Factory if you are watching this. Hey, oh, boo. God. Listen, that conversation that you guys had, yeah, I corrected her. Because so this girl came up, she's like, oh my god, like, I love you guys. This is the day before we're leaving for California. She's like, oh, I love you guys so much. And mom was like, oh, I've been crying all day. And the girl's like, oh, like, oh, but I really do love you guys. And she's like, yeah, I just want to curl into a ball and cry. And, like, every comment that this woman has made talking about how much she loves us and what we've done for her and et cetera, and asking if my mom's okay, it came out to my mom wanting to crawl on the ball. And the girl's like, oh, well, God has you. Like, I love you. Like, have a good day. I turned to my mom and I'm like, did you have to say that?
Yes, because I don't know what to say.
She gets very, not uncomfortable, but...
Awkward.
Awkward.
Very awkward. Any fan of our channel has ever walked up to me... 9 times out of 10, they're gonna
9.5.
Danielle is very awkward.
Yeah.
I am.
I mean, so am I.
Yeah, because I'm not good at small talk and I'm not good with being complimented. People don't compliment me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, let me take that back. Growing up, I wasn't really complimented a lot.
Yeah.
And when people compliment me, I kind of like I'm very dismissive of it. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, I love your outfit. Oh, yeah, I got it off of clearance. Oh, your face looks good. Oh, but I'm about to break out. I'm not very great with compliments. So when people do walk up to me, as of recent years, it's always been complimenting me with being a parent, being a woman, being mm-hmm. a black woman. And it's like, I don't know how to receive that.
They're like strong compliments.
Of they
like
are very strong.
Change the black community.
Yeah. So it's hard for me to, because if you and I were a person that gave me a compliment, you know, we sat down and had a conversation, that would be different. That would be different. I can indulge in the conversation. I could get to know you. I can read you a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I can be more sincere and, you know, understanding of the person that you are. Because it's very surface level when it's like, oh, I love you. Me and my mom, we went through a lot and you're trying to get your story out there to me in 2 seconds. I'm like, oh, I want to have this conversation with you, but I don't know what to say because I really don't know too much of the story.
Yeah.
I don't even know how we got over here.
Yeah, we've gotten off topic.
Off topic. And that, my friend, is how you do not do a podcast.
This is just a little high.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like we hit the depths of what we were talking about. We just
changed
it a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We're scattered.
Oh, yeah. Okay, little fun fact. That was supposed to be our original name, but that has been taken.
Yeah.
Scattered.
We are scattered.
Because there's never been a time that her and I have sat down and had lunch or dinner or movie time where we stay on topic. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that that resonates with, because I have ADHD and I don't know how to stay on topic to save my life. So the fact that I stayed on topic for 30 minutes, I am proud of myself. High five. So I know Theory and I got off topic a little bit, but before we leave out, I want to inform you guys that we will have some resources and information about eating disorders on our Instagram at Eating Rotten Apples Podcast. I just wanted to give you guys that little tidbit.
I just want to say thank you guys so much for 5,000 followers on Spotify, Apple, Patreon, all the
streaming
platforms that we have. Thank you guys so much for only having that as a trailer.
I know. So
we killed it.
I'm hoping that you guys do come back next week. We do have an incredible story about this young lady and her trials and tribulations with family and molestation. This one is a little personal for me, and I cannot wait to dive in it. And we will be talking about some situations that occurred in our personal life throughout the story that I'm going to be telling of Jordan.
That we can kind of relate to.
Of Jordan Waxter. But until then, I'm hoping that you guys enjoyed our first podcast, and I'm hoping that we get it together, and I'm hoping that you guys join us next week for an incredible story. It's not just a story, it's real life. And I know that a lot of people have struggled with sex abuse as well. Until next time, I am Danny with a Y.
And I am Theory with an I.
And you just eaten rotten apples.